What's up, people? What a weird movie we're talking about today.
Yeah. Not a bad movie.
It's not. It's actually really entertaining, but I forgot how strange this movie was. Maybe that's kind of why I feel like a lot of people don't really talk about this one anymore, and I had actually sort of forgotten about it. I'm pretty sure that I saw this one in the theater back when it came out in 1994.
I saw it.
I mean, yeah, I'm almost positive that I saw this in the theater, and I remember being like, hey, that was pretty good, but then I kind of forgot about it. But then, like, a couple weeks ago, I saw that Hulu had added it. I think it's on Tubi as well, if you want to watch it on there. But, and I was like, oh yeah, shit, I remember that. We should rewatch that for the show, because it's like, I remember that being pretty good. But like I said, I forgot what a strange genre mix-up it is.
Well, it's got a hook, all right?
Yeah.
And the hook in this is werewolf movie for adults.
Yeah.
They're trying to make it palatable to people in their 40s and 50s and yuppies, if you ask me, because they're trying to make it as classy as possible, as intellectual kind of as possible. And it's a beautiful movie, really, where it's shot, the locations and everything. Just there's kind of like intrigue in it, and Jack Nicholson slowly becoming a werewolf.
I mean, you know, it happens.
It's a cool idea. Not my choice, I would say. You know what I mean? It can be a little bit long, or it seems to be kind of slow in certain spots. They're trying to build up tension, which I guess works. But I like fast and fun better when it comes to monster movies. It's like a sophisticated monster movie.
And the thing about this one, too, is that I think if you go into it, because I rewatched the trailer, like, before we recorded this, and I was like, well, the trailer absolutely makes it seem like a horror movie. It is a werewolf movie, but I don't think I'd call it a horror movie.
No.
It has some horror movie aspects to it.
Drama.
But it's more a drama that also happens to have a werewolf in it. And the werewolf is almost kind of like used, I don't want to say it's used as a metaphor. It is kind of. He is an actual werewolf. It's not like he's imagining it or anything. But it is kind of used as a metaphor for him, like, kind of getting his groove back, like, because he's going through, like, a midlife crisis.
It's like going on HRT. That's what it's about.
And I knew you would say that, too, because that, well, yeah, that's, like, essentially what it is, he's kind of like a dude that's sort of, like, a little bit of a pushover at the beginning, and, like, when he starts turning into a werewolf, it starts making him more, like, assertive, and he actually starts doing better in his life. So there's that kind of thing, too, even though he does absolutely turn into a werewolf, kind of.
Yeah.
So, as I said, Wolf came out in 1994. Listen to this movie cost $70 million to make. Isn't that crazy? I don't think they would do that nowadays, like, a drama. And I was thinking about this just now. I was like, a big studio would not pay $70 million, even in today's money, to make an adult, and not adult in the sense of porn, but like a more like mature, like, you know, geared toward people, like middle-aged people, that had a werewolf in it. They would not spend $70 million on that. Like, this kind of like genre crossing type thing. Like, an indie movie might do it, and I've seen some that did, but a big studio wouldn't do it. Although this did make money. I think it ended up making $130 million, $140 million, something like that.
I think what they were trying to do is for old school monster movies, they were trying to do for that what Richard Donner did for with Superman 1 for superhero movies. They were trying to bring back high end monster movies.
Yeah.
Okay. Before these times, I guess you could say, even though this is much, much after Superman 1. Superheroes and monster movies were fucking kids. That was for fucking kids.
Yeah.
It was garbage. All right. So they're trying to elevate those. And superheroes got elevated. You know, MCU and all that. You know. And they've been trying to do that with monsters movies, you know, like Universal Monsters forever. It's been failing.
Well, essentially, I mean, when this movie came out in 1994... I think people forget, and I might have brought this up when we were talking about the Brendan Fraser Mummy movies, which were another kind of, you know, that was also sort of like a little bit later where they were trying to redo the, like, Universal monsters. But right around this time, they were trying to do that too, because if you guys remember, They did Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula.
Yeah.
They did Kenneth Branagh did Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And also, and I had totally forgotten about this one until I was looking into it, there was a movie with Julia Roberts called Mary Riley, which was essentially Jekyll and Hyde, but it was from her point of view. Like, I think she would like worked in their household, so she was like telling it from their story. So there was that one. I don't think it did very well, but when somebody mentioned it, I was like, oh yeah. So they did actually try to do, and this really does kind of harken back. Like I said, I wouldn't call it a horror movie, but it does kind of harken back to the original Universal monster movies in the sense that it's like character based.
Yeah.
This one isn't set; it's not folkloric necessarily because it's set in the modern day in New York City, like in the big publishing industry and stuff like that. But then they inject, a werewolf into it. But it's a lot more like character driven. It's more like a drama, but with some comedy and romance in it. But it's also a werewolf movie.
It's a straight up werewolf movie.
Yeah.
It's classic werewolf movie in many ways.
Yeah,
they just updated it.
Yeah, and they didn't, like I said, so just don't go into it thinking it's going to be like a traditional, more cheap, like teenage monster movie type thing, because it's really not like that. It's funny that you were saying about like superhero and stuff, because I was reading a couple of really funny write-ups about this movie. One was on Den of Geek and one was on Collider. And I think it was Den of Geek that said, essentially what this movie is a superhero origin story except for middle-aged people. You know what I mean? And I was like, yeah, that pretty much calls it right there. And whoever wrote the piece on Collider, who I think is also a writer for Cracked, but he said, even back in 1994, the median target age for this movie was 47 years old.
I figured.
Yeah, yeah. He was making a joke, but it's not really a joke because it's kind of true.
That's kind of true, right. And I instantly picked up on what they're talking about is steroid use. Testosterone use is exactly what they're talking about.
Well, it's a guy that's having a midlife crisis, like I said, getting his groove back.
And all of a sudden, he said he's got something in his blood that's making him come back, and it's a werewolf bite. But that's not, and then his hair starts growing, his body hair starts growing back and stuff. And the hair on his head starts growing back too.
And he looks a little bit younger.
Starts becoming more aggressive. He's intimidating younger men and shit. And I'm going like, whoever wrote this fucking was fucking around with testosterone.
Well, a woman wrote it, so I don't know. Elaine May wrote it.
She did her research then.
Yeah.
Maybe she knew some dude that was doing that. Because HRT is not new. People have been doing it since the 50s.
Yeah, I know.
It's just that it was a small, tiny segment of dudes that knew about it.
But yeah, I mean, the thing about this movie, there's so much... You can see why probably this is targeted more toward like an older audience, or why they made that joke, even back in the 90s. Because... Listen to, like, all the fucking Oscar-winning shit behind this. So you had, like, Jack Nicholson in the main role. Yeah. You had Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
You got James Spader, who I had totally forgotten was in this movie. He's great. Kate Nelligan, she's not in it all that much. Richard Jenkins, Christopher Plummer, for Christ's sake. David Hyde Pierce, all kind of shit. The score was done by Ennio Morricone, for Christ's sake. And it was directed by Mike Nichols. For fuck's sake, who, very famous, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, The Graduate, probably his best known one, Catch-22, Silkwood, The Birdcage, Charlie Wilson's War. Dude has a shit ton of Oscars. He also made Day of the Dolphin, but, you know, everybody fucks up every now and then. But, so this was, and it was written, as I said, by Elaine May, who was his longtime writer, collaborator, partner. And so a lot of the funny shit, I kind of feel like, comes from her, because this is almost kind of like a very droll office intrigue movie with a werewolf in it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It had a lot of good touches to it, though. I mean,
it did. I liked it a lot.
When the first part of the movie I'm watching, goes, boy, Jack looks pretty bad in this.
Yeah.
You know?
But there's a reason.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that they were kind of doing that on purpose. It was very subtle.
Yeah.
You know? That they kind of told him, look, you're going to be a little schlubby. And he said, Jack's looking kind of bad. But then by the time fucking that werewolf blood starts kicking in, it's like HRT. He's fucking virile again. The way he carries himself, his face, he changed. And there's no prosthetics. It's just the way they shot him, and I guess probably a little bit of makeup, and how he carried himself, his attitude. He seemed a lot younger, even though he wasn't. He didn't look younger. Yeah, he didn't look younger. He seemed younger, though.
Well, that's probably, like I said, I kind of feel like maybe like the scenes at the beginning, they're kind of like, hey, why don't you walk a little slouched over? Or they might have like deepened some of the wrinkles on his face.
Make him a little fatter.
Made him a little fatter, like made his hair look thinner, like shit like that. So then like when he changed later on, it's not real dramatic, but you can still tell that he's walking a lot straighter, and it's like he has more hair, it looks like. And he looks like he's not as wrinkled.
I think his hair might have been a little bit darker, a little bit thicker, even though he's still bald, kind of like, you know, he's bald in the front. It's just that it's not as prominent. And shit was getting spiky, and he had more facial hair. When he turned straight werewolf, he had his beard would come in and then go away. It was pretty weird. It's one thing I got to say that I did like about it. They didn't really use any werewolf prosthetics.
And Rick Baker did the shit on this. He did American Werewolf in London, obviously, and he worked on The Howling as well. So you would think that this would be kind of like a special effects extravaganza, but it's very restrained.
Real restrained. Like, kind of like the original Wolfman in a way. Just more restrained than that, actually. He just would do things like... Couldn't he run on all fours when he had to? He could jump.
He did kind of. It was mostly just kind of like jumping around, like running fast.
Yeah.
You know, he did like jump high walls and stuff.
And he could kill dudes with his bare hands.
Yeah.
He could kill young men with his bare hands. You just see it in shadow, which I like that. Because it probably wouldn't look that credible if they actually shot it. It was more credible when you saw that guy's shadow of him killing that guy underneath that bridge for fucking with him.
Yeah.
And which I liked it. He could talk as a werewolf too, which I liked that.
Yeah, he didn't completely wolf out. He was still like 90% guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He just kind of looked wolfy with gold eyes.
Yeah, and he would say shit kind of like Dr. Jekyll would say, or Mr. Hyde would say, you know.
Yeah, this might have, this kind of works too. It's just more like a Jekyll and Hyde type story. Although, you know, it's more werewolf because, like I said, it's the moon and it's just like nighttime and blah, blah. But, you know, it's the same kind of thing, and they kind of go into... You know, him maybe like this will be good because it's making him, like I said, a lot more assertive, and he's not like letting people walk all over him anymore.
I don't give a shit what y'all say. I like fucking Russell Crowe's Dr. Jekyll.
Yeah,
that Mummy movie. I was intrigued. I was like, oh, I want a whole movie of that.
I kind of wish they had made that movie instead of the Mummy movie.
Yeah,
that would have been a lot more interesting. I kind of there's not enough Jekyll and Hyde movies. I kind of feel like
Crowe could fucking do it great. He slowly just slowly start turning into fucking Hyde, and I'm like listening, and I'm going right along with him. Let's do that. I didn't realize that he was turning, but it was sounding good. Okay.
You know? The one thing about this, and like you said, it's probably good that they didn't go like the whole straight up horror action movie route. There is like a big kind of, if you want to call it like a boss fight, like at the end, which is not shot super well.
No.
But like I said, Mike Nichols, he's more of like a drama guy. So he's not really an action director. So, I mean, he did fine, like, for what it was.
And for the time,
but there was, like, a little bit of, like, cheesy slow-mo in there and, like, stuff like that. But it's not terrible.
It was on par with a Superman boss fight.
That's true. Yeah.
Pretty much like that.
It is kind of like that.
Which, when you look at the old Donner Superman, you know, fun, but nowhere near what you could do today.
Yeah.
Nowhere near.
So, what happens in this movie, you might be asking? So Jack Nicholson plays, he's like the senior editor, right, of like a big publishing house in New York City. He's presumably been doing it for a really long time. At the very beginning of the movie, he's coming back from a business trip, I think, and he's in Vermont or some shit like that. And it's like out in the snow, and he hits a wolf. And he thinks the wolf is dead, so he goes over there and is like, what the fuck? And he's like poking it, and then it comes out and bites him. And then, for a long time, there's, like, no wolfery going on in the movie. It's just kind of, like, establishing. He goes back to his job. He's got a wife. They haven't had sex in a while. There's that whole thing going on. And then he's working at this publishing house, and this publishing house has just gotten taken over by Christopher Plummer's character, who's, like, some billionaire. And even though... Will, his which is Jack Nicholson's character's name, he's pretty sure that he's gonna get fired. Like, a lot of them are gonna get fired because the company that's taking over, they're just like, well, we just want shit that's gonna like sell zillions of copies. We don't give a shit if the book is good or not, type of thing. So then there's James Spader's character, who is pretending to be Will's protege and his friend and everything like that. But since it's James Spader, you know pretty much that he's just going to be like this weaselly backstabbing asshole, which is indeed what he turns out to be. Also turns out that he's banging Will's wife, too, on the sly. So all of that's going on. There's like all this office politics. You know, Jack Nicholson ends up getting fired. And then he meets the daughter of the guy that took over the company, who is Michelle Pfeiffer. Now, I will say, I know that the two of these were together together in Witches of Eastwick, which is another one we should do, because I actually really like that movie, although the book was better. But yeah, so one thing about it is that I get that they were doing the whole Jack Nicholson's having a midlife crisis, then he gets bit by a wolf, and then like he's like, hey, this werewolfery thing isn't so bad after all, because it's like making me look younger and more virile, and I can jump over shit and yeah. all this other stuff. And oh, by the way, sometimes I kill people, but okay, well, you know.
And women were interested in him all of a sudden.
Yeah, so I mean, it
he
is
tried
kind
to put
of
put a move on Michelle Pfeiffer, didn't work until that fucking wolf blood started kicking in.
Well, now he already had been bitten at that point, because he was still spooking the horses and stuff, but at first she
it
was just
kicked in
like,
though. It yeah, kicked in. Remember?
Now she is considerably younger than him. So I think at the time of this filming, she was 20 years younger.
Was she that younger? Okay. I thought she was that much
so younger. It is a little weird, but you know what I mean?
Do it all the time.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm just saying it is a little weird, but it works out.
It was between rich people.
And I actually really like her character.
Yeah.
Like I just, she, cause I feel like she just gets to be, I don't know. I have a feel. I don't know her, but I just kind of feel like her character in this movie is kind of like what she's probably like in real life. You know what I mean? I don't know why I get that impression, but she just comes across as very like naturalistic. So they kind of start a little romance. Cause like I said, his wife is bonking the James Spader, and he finds out about it and like kicks her out and, you know, starts crushing this, this younger chick. And also, he starts, like I said, there's not a lot of wolfery going on for, like, a significant portion of the movie.
You get suspense. They're trying to get
And then,
suspense.
Yeah, but he just starts doing shit like he gets, like, super hearing and, like, super smell. And his senses get really heightened. And then he decides, hey, I'm not going to, like, take this getting fired thing lying down. And he decides he's going to not only get back at James Spader for being a backbiting little bitch, but who took his job and is banging his wife. But he's like, I'm going to get my fucking job back and I'm going to be a senior editor. And he starts like dropping his nuts, like coming in there going, I'm going to leave and I'm going to take all the authors with me.
He
I'm going to do this and that.
Marking his territory and achieving dominance inside the pack. That's what he's doing.
Yes,
he even becomes dominant over his boss.
Yeah.
By getting fucking leverage on him. And it's a lesson in a lot of fucking what happens to you in life has to do with how you play your cards. He started playing his cards right and actually using the strength that he had. He had these strengths, he just wasn't using them.
Yeah.
Okay.
I kind of feel like that's one slight criticism I could give the movie is that Jack Nicholson is Jack Nicholson. I mean, whatever movie he's in, he always comes across as a little bit of a lunatic.
Yeah.
So
in a good way.
In a good way.
Yeah.
So I don't really buy it. Like at the beginning of the movie, he's kind of supposed to be like this meek, like pushover type of dude. You don't quite buy that because you know that he's not really like that. Like, but he seems to play everything. So he plays everything very subtle. You would think because Jack Nicholson actually had been trying to get this movie made because he really wanted to play a werewolf apparently for a really long time until, you know, for many years prior to it getting made. And so you would think that he's like, yeah, I want to play a werewolf so I can just like wolf the fuck out and chew all the scenery and spit it back out. But he doesn't do that. He plays it actually really, really low key and like restrained, which is kind of an interesting choice. Yeah.
According to Brian, Jack Nicholson has a real good reputation in Hollywood for being generous and amiable, real friendly, real alpha kind of guy.
Well, see,
he's not a dick.
That's what I'm saying.
I was talking to him. He seems like he comes across as seems to me like he'd be a dick. And he's like, no, he's got a real good reputation. He's got a real good reputation for being real cool.
But see, that's the thing, because he has, and like I said, I don't know him personally, I'm just saying, like, from his movie roles, he always comes across, he never struck me as being, like, a meek person or a person that would let people push him around, so I think that's, like, slightly not as believable at the beginning of the movie when he's kind of supposed to be a character like that. They don't overplay it, But he's just somebody that's sort of like, he's not really meek. He's more like complacent.
Yeah.
He's he's like middle aged. He's like, yeah. You know, he's gotten to a point where he's just kind of like not progressing
anymore.
He's not competitive.
Anymore.
Right. It's just kind of more like that.
Yeah, he's stagnant. He's not competitive.
Yeah, rather than just being right. like, oh, yes, man. He's not like obsequious. Mm. It's more kind of like, he's just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. He's not competitive.
Yeah.
He's not in the game. The younger guys were in the game, more competitive, and were outrunning him.
Yeah.
His woman and everything. And
I mean,
job.
Especially James Spader.
That's who we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, just that guy. I love James Spader, and I just reviewed a movie that he was in 1988 called Jack's Back, where he actually played a little bit against type. He kind of played like a nice guy. But usually James Spader, and I'm sure he's a perfectly nice person in real life, but he was just really scarily good at playing like really... playing pricks. He was just really good at playing arrogant, douchey, yuppie pricks. He was just so good at that. And he plays that in this, like, to a T. You know what I mean? He is just kind of like, he just flares his big-ass nostrils. And the thing about this one, too, the character that he plays in this, it has, like, kind of a little bit of another dimension because he's also really backstabbing. Like, he pretends at first, like, hey, I'm your best friend, and oh, my gosh, I can't believe you got fired. That's such a bummer, blah, blah, blah. And, like, all this time, he had been, you know, kind of going behind the scenes and, like, getting his job and, like, fucking his wife and all this other stuff while pretending to be all genuine and shit. So I kind of really like his character in this. And it's so he kind of becomes, like, the main antagonist, you know, as the movie goes on. So it's almost kind of like a weird, like I said, it's like office politics, drama. It's funny, too, but it's more, like, witty funny. You know, it's more, like, droll funny. It's not, like, zany funny. And... But then there's, like, a werewolf in it. It's not super gory. It's not really the only kind of big werewolf, like I said, boss fight you get. There is the one scene where he attacks those three. He's, like, in the park at night, and then, like, those three thugs, like, come up and try to, like, take his money or whatever. And then he attacks them. But like you said, it's just in shadow. It's implied. And then you don't really find out what happened until later. Like, he's in the bathroom, and he goes like that, and he pulls out, like, a couple of, like, severed fingers. And he's like, oh, shit, what the fuck did I do last night? Because he can't remember.
Yeah.
Because he gets into the thing where, am I going out at night and killing people? And then he gets, like, all fucking upset about it, and it starts, like, chaining himself to radiators and whatnot.
Yeah.
But,
It's a good movie. It's not typical for a monster movie at all. The werewolf element of the story is kind of just the superficial element of the story. It has a deeper meaning. Okay. The deeper message is basically to men, if you ask me, and it's about aging. That it's a morality tale about that. What the story is telling you is that you get older as a man, the game changes, but you can still be in the game. You just have to play the cards differently. Also, there is definitely a subliminal HRT message or hormone replacement therapy message in there that you don't have to age normally. That you can put something in your blood that will make you keep your edge for a lot longer. It comes out basically says that. He even goes to a dude who kind of like a witch doctor kind of guy who explains to him what's going on. He asked to get bitten so he can have it. And he said no, and he says, okay, I respect your decision. So they're talking about hormone replacement. In 1994, they knew about it.
Although the interesting thing about that is that when he goes and sees that guy, who's played by Puri.
Yeah.
And that guy, I don't think he's not like a witch doctor. He's like a folklorist or some kind of thing like that. Like he studies that type of thing.
He understands legends and shit.
Yeah. And so he goes to see that guy. But the interesting thing about the mythology of the werewolf in this movie, I don't even know if it's implied or if they state this outright. You don't have to have been bitten by a werewolf to become a werewolf.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm sure it helps. But basically he says something
you
like, if you
it.
Have the passion of the werewolf, then you can just become one without having had. So you can just, if you're like wolfy enough inside, like if you have that spirit in you already, then you don't need to have been bitten by a werewolf. You will just become one if you want it bad enough,
I guess. He was bitten.
Yeah, he was too. And
he asked to be bitten.
Yeah.
So it's just saying even that guy who is kind of like the fucking Joseph Campbell of the story, even he wanted it. he wanted something in his blood.
Because he was dying. He was, like, really, really old.
He was dying, too. But something in his blood would have helped him. There was, and he also said something that is, it's not about damnation or morality. He says that wolves don't worry about morality. It's just nature. It's natural drive.
Well, what he said was that, you know, the spirit of the wolf is not good or bad, but if you're a good man,
it is what
then
it is.
Then it'll be good. Exactly. If you're an evil man, then it'll be bad.
Right, and fucking, that's HRT. That's what he's talking about.
But see, the interesting thing about it, like I said, you know, the men in this get bit by wolves, or in James Spader's case, gets bit by Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
But the implication at the end with Michelle Pfeiffer is that she didn't have to get bit. Because she already had the wolf spirit inside, which is kind of like established with her character, I'm guessing. Right. Because she didn't get bit at any point, I don't think. So I think that she just became one, because I think that was what they were implying.
Are they
by
saying that,
conversation. That
women don't need testosterone?
Well, see, I think you're reading too much into that. I think, because I know you're very testosterone, that's all you kind of like think about now.
That's what they're saying.
So, yeah, I know. I get that metaphor, but I think you're taking it like way too far and like way too literally.
All right.
I don't think they were literally saying that in the movie, because they did bring up you don't have to have been bitten by a werewolf. Like, it doesn't have to be get into your blood. You just have to have that spirit within you. So I think it's not even so much like HRT. It was just kind of like, you know, whether you're a man or a woman, like finding your assertiveness is what it was. Don't let yourself get complacent, even if you're old. So you don't really need to even like posit that it's something you inject or something like that. They're just saying don't get complacent as you get older. You know, you still have a lot of life ahead of you. Just get out there and like drop your nuts and like do your shit. You know what I mean? Get your confidence back. That's kind of basically what the general message of it is, too. Like I said, so I think that's why, like, Michelle Pfeiffer becoming a werewolf without having to be bitten. They were just saying, well, she already had that spirit within her.
If that's what the message was, then the message is saying that it's more than one factor, then. It's attitude and what's in your blood.
Yeah.
Okay. It could be both. And... it's a holistic approach is what they're talking about.
Yeah, pretty much. And I kind of liked that's not crazy, like, because I have read some folklore before where it said you don't have to have been bit by a werewolf, because there's some of the werewolf legends have like all sorts of shit that has to happen before you become a werewolf. But some legends have it's like, you know, if you're just like a really, really bad person, like a serial killer, then you'll become one or something like that. So you don't necessarily have to have been like cursed by a werewolf or bit by a wolf or anything
vampire
like that.
Vampire stories and werewolf stories, if you go back far enough, they're about serial killers.
Pretty much.
They'd find dead women and stuff mauled up, and they would say, well, a human couldn't have done this. You know, a vampire did it, or a werewolf did it. They even caught a guy, I think it was in the 1400s or 1300s, they caught him out in the woods living with his sister and the children that they had together, and he was a damn serial killer. He was jumping on farm girls and raping and eating them. And he believed he was a werewolf.
Yeah, I've been wanting to do a show about that guy, actually. Yeah. I think I put it in the poll a couple times, but it didn't win.
He thought he was.
Because that's a pretty famous
And the
case.
People thought he was, too. So things like that have been going on for a long time, I believe.
Well, yeah, that's where the legends came from. Right, it's not like people don't actually turn into wolves, but those legends do come from somewhere.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Interestingly, a couple trivial facts about this is that the Michelle Pfeiffer role was originally going to go to Sharon Stone, but she turned it down.
Yeah, I'm glad Pfeiffer got it.
Yeah, I always liked Michelle Pfeiffer, to be honest with you. I even like her in Grease 2, for heaven's sakes. Yeah. She sings in that. In case
she's a cute woman.
She's actually quite a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
And also, you had pointed out in this movie, the interior of the publishing house where Jack Nicholson's character works is a very distinctive building. And we were like, that building's in like a fuck ton of movies.
That's the one from Blade Runner.
It was in Blade Runner. It's called the Bradbury Building.
Yeah.
It was also in Double Indemnity, Chinatown,
it's
Disclosure.
It's just owned by a studio, right?
No.
It's not, they do use
it
now?
It's been in use the entire time.
Okay.
It's mostly just a bunch of different offices. I think there's a museum in there.
Okay.
There's all kind of different stuff.
I thought it had been abandoned for a long time.
No, it wasn't?
Okay.
It's a bunch of offices.
So they were using it when they were filming Blade Runner as an office?
I don't know about back then.
Because that looked fucking Empty.
It was refurbished in, I mean, maybe it was abandoned for a time. It was refurbished in 1989.
Okay.
And then they never, like, they let other companies buy it, like investment companies, but they only, they kind of only let companies buy it that would, that would keep it the way it was.
Oh, okay.
Because it's a very distinctive, not so much the outside looks nice too, but the inside with all those wrought iron, like staircases and elevators and stuff.
Right.
They wanted somebody that was going to preserve the historic beauty of the place. So they said, we're not going to sell it to you unless you, you know, leave it the way it is and, you know, just fix it up the way it is.
Because in the Blade Runner scene that you see it in, man, that thing is definitely empty. They run through all the damn... They run through all the rooms, and it's just empty and filled with junk. Remember?
Yeah.
And even some of the walls were broken, had holes in them.
Yeah. Like I said, so I don't know about...
It must have been abandoned at that time or owned by a studio.
It might have been, but it did get bought by an investment company in 2007. And since then, there's, you know, and there were companies in it before that, but now there's, like, all kind of different offices in there. Like I said, I think there's a museum of Chinese art. There's, like, a bunch of other things in there. So it is in use.
Right.
And I think it was in use when this movie was shot as well. But, yeah, so, yeah, Blade Runner, what did I say, Double Indemnity, Chinatown, Disclosure, which came out the same year as this, Lethal Weapon 4, this was in there as well, 500 Days of Summer. This was also in a shit ton of, like, TV shows and a shit ton of music videos and stuff like that. And if you see it, it's a very, very distinctive building. It's a landmark in Los Angeles, so there's that as well. So, yeah, this movie, as I said, it's on Tubi and it's on Hulu. If you go into it not expecting it to be a horror movie, it's actually really entertaining. I mean, how often do you get to see a werewolf movie with this many A-listers in it?
Yeah.
With, like, an Oscar-winning director and all this other stuff. You don't usually get to see that kind of thing.
And it's in, like, beautiful, beautiful locations of the ultra-rich.
Yeah,
huge mansions and huge, This is a, it's a classy-looking movie.
Yeah.
It's filmed really well.
Yeah.
This is top-notch. Top-notch production for 94.
Yeah, I mean, this was a high-end, like, big-budget studio movie.
Yeah.
About, like I said, office politics and a dude, like, finding his nuts, except he's a werewolf.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just, like, it is very much kind of like a superhero origin story.
Yeah.
Which they didn't really, I guess in today's parlance, it's, like, a
they
lot more.
They didn't have that then.
Yeah, they didn't really have that then. And now I think people are looking back, looking at it, going, oh, I see what you're doing there.
Yeah.
So this might have been, like, a little bit ahead of its time. Roger Ebert, when this came out, he actually compared this a little bit. He actually quite liked this movie, but he compared it. He's like, it's not exactly the same, but it's kind of the same vibe as, like, Cronenberg's The Fly. In the sense that it's sort of like a drama and a romance, but also like a monster movie.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it kind of has the same, but it's not exactly the same. And like I said, don't go into it expecting it to be a horror movie because it's not. But if you go into it thinking that it's going to be kind of like a wry drama comedy that also has a werewolf in it, then I think you'll enjoy it quite a bit because it is actually quite entertaining. And that last act is pretty crazy. Like I said, Mike Nichols is not an action director. And I like that James Spader, in his werewolf mode, just fucking goes for it. You know what I mean? He just, like, he chews up all the scenery that Jack Nicholson didn't chew up.
Yeah.
And it's super fun. I love it. But yeah, so go watch it. Or if you've seen it, if you saw it at the time, let me know what you thought about this movie, because I feel like it's one that a lot of people don't really talk about anymore, or people kind of, like, forgot about. And I had kind of forgotten about it until recently, so I was glad to, like, be able to watch it again. Weirder than I remembered, but, you know, it's still really good and still really fun. So check it out. And that will do it for this movie retrospective. We will see you guys on the next one. Bye.